Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:07 p.m. That is Pacific Standard Time. Excuse me, summertime. Today is March 12th. What's been occupying my mind today is the initial jobless claims in the USA. I've read this very interesting article on Medium.com, and I'm going to post it in comment of the day. And it's discussing the evolution of the sharing economy into what is effectively the subscription business model. And with now you have, for example, IKEA is getting into the rental business, and then you have Apple and Disney are about to launch their streaming services. Then you have the fact that Travis Kalanick is he's going back to compete against Uber by renting out kitchens to small restaurateurs that want to simply use Uber Eats as a delivery mechanism for their food. Well, what all of this is starting to point towards is not simply that we have a subscription business model out there, but that it is increasingly becoming the business model of choice for an increasingly large number of both small and large companies. But all of it is obviously competing for the monthly or weekly cash flows of your average worker. Big companies have basically concluded that people are simply not, or an increasingly large number of people are unlikely to be able to afford to make big capital outlays, and therefore they are going back to what is effectively a rental model. Now, the thing that we've seen recently is that both Uber and Lyft are very eager to get their to IPO. They want to get the and something that we talk about at the chart seminar is simple enough. When's the best time to sell your company? Well, or list your company on the stock market? It's generally when you think you can get more for it than it's worth. And one of the things that people have been worrying about, particularly in the last few weeks, has been the rise in auto loan delinquencies. Well, one would have to think that part of the reason for that is we're approaching the tax season in the USA. A lot of these workers that have been driving around for Uber and Lyft for the last 12 months have figured out that they're not making any money, and in fact they're losing money, so they stop paying back their car loans. Well, when that eventually starts to hit the bottom line of these companies, well, then that is when there's going to be a real crisis of confidence. The one thing that we've already seen is that jobless claims have stopped contracting. We've had a pretty steady downtrend over the course of the last decade, but it's going to have to drop below 200,000 in order for this trend to persist. And I think the big threats out there on the horizon, rather than thinking about all of the different factors that are in the media, is potentially that some of these unicorn companies or whatever moniker one wishes to attach to them, represent clear credit risks. I think that's something that we should be paying particular attention to. And that's particularly true when we look at the rally that we're getting in the Nasdaq. The market has rebounded pretty impressively over the last three sessions, and it moved to a new recovery high in here today. But the most important thing is that it has held the sequence of higher reaction lows. It has confirmed support in the region of 7,000, and it has broken the sequence of lower rally highs evidenced since September. So that's really quite encouraging. And it's being led higher by some of the largest companies. So that's also that's positive for two particular reasons. One, of course, is that these represent the major constituents of the major indices. But of course, then there is this ETF effect that people don't just go out and buy Amazon, they go and buy the ETF. So that helps to, I think, add some support to just about everything. And the NYSE FANG index is steadying from the region of the trend mean, and it has clearly broken its sequence of lower rally highs. Now, a clear downward dynamic would be required to question potential for additional upside. Of course, that's not beyond the bounds of possibility, but we haven't seen it yet. However, when we look at the smaller caps, well, they are still underperforming, but at least they're steadying from the region of the trend mean. One, I think, potentially important topic is going to be Boeing. Another one of their planes fell out of the sky over the weekend. That has had a really very deleterious effect on the share. It's gone from being one of the most overextended on the upside to reverting straight back to the mean. There are an increasingly large number of airlines that are grounding their 737 MAXs. Quite whether that gets extended to the wider fleet is going to be a big question. And Boeing is far and away the largest constituent of the Dow Jones Industrials Average, which is still a pretty significant benchmark, at least on the way that people talk on the financial media. Well, the index is above the trend mean, and it has at least steadied in the region of this 25,000 level. So there is potential here that some of the performance of the other constituents can counterbalance at least the potential for additional downside or some very or continued volatile ranging in Boeing. The other big topic in here today has been the pound, and it has really been very volatile. Considering that Theresa May's deal was shot down again in Parliament, they're now going to vote on whether they want to, in fact, have a hard Brexit or not. Well, there is the potential that after they potentially vote that down, that they're then going to vote on an extension. One, I guess, set of potential outcomes that hasn't really got a lot of airplay is that Parliament could vote both of those options down, and then there is really no, they don't have a plan if that in fact happens. So there is certainly the potential here that we're going to get additional volatility, and the pound is right at the upper side of the range that's persisted since July. Against the euro, we've had a 3 cent range on the day. It had got all the way up to 118, and it's closing out the day closer to 115 and a half. So that's a very profound move on the day, and what it suggests is that there is a distinct lack of appetite for bidding up the pound while there is still uncertainty about the outcome of the Brexit negotiations. If it sustains a move below the 114 area, then people will start talking about a failed upside break, and that could potentially take it all the way back down to 110. So we are certainly at a very pivotal point here for the pound and the UK generally. Every time the pound rallies, it puts some pressure on the FTSE, and the FTSE is likely to benefit from the weakness of the pound tomorrow. But the most important thing is that it has been largely range-bound over the course of the last 6 weeks, and that has broken the sequence of lower rally highs. That's a pretty similar condition to what we've seen right across Europe, and the European market was pretty much unchanged in here today. Then, when we think about what's going on in terms of Germany, the DAX has not quite yet been able to push above the trend mean. And it's going to have to at least do that in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The MDAX, which is the mid-caps, has just about been able to push above the trend mean. It's not particularly the most, it's not really the most consistent of trends. There have been quite a few dips below the trend mean, but this most recent dip has been larger, and it pulled back into, at least temporarily, into the underlying trading range. So it's quite likely we're going to see some additional time required to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Then, when we look at what's going on in Japan, the Nikkei rallied rather impressively in here today and confirmed near-term support, at least in the region of the 21,000 point level. that's now taking it back up towards the region of the trend mean. And it's going to, again, it's another index that needs to sustain a move back above that level in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The second section index also has not quite been able to push back above the 7,000 level. Considering the speed with which it pulled back, it has got very clear type 2 top formation characteristics. But now the potential here is that we're going to get a period of right-hand extension, and that could be potentially lengthy. In order to truly confirm we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond short-term steadying and short covering, it has to get back above that 7,000 level. There is obviously a lot of uncertainty in the market right now about the nature of negotiations going on between the UK and Europe and between the USA and China. The Chinese market has rallied very impressively since the beginning of January when we had that clear upside key reversal. In fact, we've had two upside key reversals from China. The first was sorry, let me close that. Well, the first was back here in October, and the second was right at the beginning of January. Now we have a short-term overbought condition, and we're getting some consolidation. But China is engaged in fiscal stimulus. They are still potentially going to have some monetary stimulus. It's not going to be on the same magnitude as what we saw in 2009 or the kinds of supports we saw for the market in 2014. But we are definitely getting support for the market, and that is helping to support the stock market, but also the banks. And the banking sector rallied faster than the wider market, and it did not pull back by as much following the move that we saw in 2014. Now, the good part of the reason for that is because it's state sponsored, and that there is very clear official support for the banking sector from the government in China. The one thing I think that Xi Jinping is wary of is going to Mar-a-Lago and sitting down to talk with President Trump, and then President Trump getting up and walking away. That's obviously a risk considering what happened with North Korea. Well, they obviously then want to try and get a deal done before there is a meeting. President Trump wants to get a deal done at the meeting. So that is obviously going to represent a point of contention. I think if we are really going to think about what we can expect, it's quite clear that China is willing to make some concessions on trade, but they're not going to agree to anything that would impede their longer-term objective of becoming the global leader in terms of economic growth and technological leadership. So that is potentially going to be the sticking point, and it really is then the question of whether or just how badly does President Trump want a deal. The one thing that we can conclude from just about any politician is that they want a second term. They want to be able to prove that the first term was not an anomaly. So that would suggest that the last thing President Trump wants is a recession. Well, inflation measures in the USA today came in a bit lower than anticipated, and that has had a clearly bullish effect on bond prices, and it's represented a contraction in the yield. Well, this is clearly suggesting that the bond market has concluded there are not going to be additional interest rate hikes. In fact, if we see a sustained move below the 2.5% level, then that would conclude that the bond market is pricing in rate cuts. So that's also one of the reasons why we need to pay particular attention to companies like Uber and Lyft, because they employ so many people. Regardless of whether they are considered employees or contractors or drivers, they do rely on these companies for their livelihood, and these are companies that do not make any money. They certainly turn over plenty of money, but they don't have profits. And these bond yields contracting do suggest that there is a clear, I think, sorry, I can't talk and chew gum, sorry. There is a clear bid in the bond market to, I think, represent the view that we are done with interest rate hikes. And this chart of the 2-year yield does not look bullish. It really suggests that there is ample scope for a contraction in yields. So I think those are some of the more important points that we have here. Then if we look at the yield curve spread, it's now at just below 15 basis points. Well, this isn't the lowest level that we've had over the course of the last 4 or 5 months, but it is pulling back from the upper side of this range. And this is still a pretty consistent medium-term downtrend. Well, again, that is suggesting that liquidity conditions are not nearly as loose as people would like to assume. So when we think about the outlook for the stock market, then we know that we've had a pretty impressive rebound, and it is very much contingent on the S&P 500 being able to sustain a move back above this 2800 point level. And we're not there quite yet. Certainly, we've had an impressive rebound in the FANG shares, and if they persist, then that will help to drag this index higher. The most important thing is that the sequence of higher reaction lows needs to hold. That is suggesting that there are quite a few stops in the region of 2700 points, and I suspect that that will be a very important level for these markets. Now, when we look at the commodities complex, the oil price today tried to push up and out of its range, but it wasn't quite able to hold the advance. I'm posting the summary report from the IEA, where they're predicting that the USA is going to be pumping an additional 4 million barrels by the end of the next decade. And that is a very substantial change to the global oil order. The simple fact of the matter is that production in the USA is privately owned. They have a clear profit motivation, and that is completely at odds with the national priorities of the nationally owned oil companies all over the world. It's also one of the leading contributors to this shakeup in the global order. The USA does not need to invest quite as much in becoming or enforcing its role as the global police force when it doesn't have to ensure the security of the Middle East. That has been abundantly clear over the last few years, and it is likely to continue to be the case. There is also the very clear potential here that we could have lower energy prices for the foreseeable future. That it's unlikely prices are going to be able to sustain a move above $80 for the foreseeable future. That when they come back towards $50, some of the supply will get shut in. But as prices rise, then the potential for additional supply to come to the market will improve. That's one of the really important changes that has occurred as a result of unconventional oil and gas production. They are constantly in need of drilling. So if you want to stop producing, you can stop drilling. That's really not the case for conventional wells. So there is an elasticity of supply with unconventional oil and gas that you just don't get elsewhere. That is a very significant advantage in a volatile price environment. Of course, if the USA becomes an outright exporter and then one of the largest exporters in the world, then that is going to create some very difficult geopolitical conflicts because it is going to set it very much more at odds with Russia. So that is certainly something that we can potentially anticipate over the medium term. Then there is the potential for a grand bargain between the USA and China if China starts to import more US oil. That could very clearly, I think, rebalance the trade figures. So energy is enormously important in terms of geopolitics and the outlook for the global economy. And this is something I think we're going to see much more evidence of in the political front for the foreseeable future. Meanwhile, gold prices have pushed back above $1,300. The contraction in yields, the potential for interest rates to come down, is really a very clear beneficial sign for gold prices. And it does look like we've seen at least near-term support in the region of the trend mean. Silver continues to bounce from the $15 area, which represents the upper side of the underlying base formation, and there is certainly ample scope here for additional upside. Platinum was also in positive territory in here today. So that's now a higher reaction low for platinum, and we haven't seen one of those in really quite some time. Of course, it's going to have to do better than that in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. In fact, if you look at the weekly chart, there is a mild upward bias to trading over the course of the last 6 months, but it needs to break back above the $900 area in order to really confirm that we've got more than short-term support around this $800 area. But prices are jolly low. And then to round it out, palladium was also in positive territory in here today, and this continues to look like a reasonably equal-sized reaction within the context of a steep but still fairly consistent medium-term uptrend. Then in the industrial metals complex, copper prices were positive in here today, and not quite able to hold on to all of the advance, but certainly starting to give initial signs of support coming through in this $2.90 area. Then in the soft commodities, wheat had a clear upward dynamic, suggesting there was some short covering starting to come through. There's certainly a very clear short-term oversold condition, and it had come back down towards this psychological $4 area. So there is certainly scope for additional short covering or a reversion back up towards the mean. What I think is starting to look interesting as well is corn. When we look at the medium-term chart for corn, it has tended to rally in the period from generally the May through September, or excuse me, May, June, July periods over the last few years. And we're starting to see just the initial evidence right now of the price starting to do better. If the seasonal factors that have affected the price over the last 5 years remain intact, then we can anticipate that we'll get a rally above $4 at some point over the next few months. Before then, we get a contract change and prices start to come back down again. That's if the status quo in the wider market continues. And then lumber prices, having been up their limit over the course of the last few days, were down in here today. What we have seen is that the limits have been widened. And when we look at those limits now, there is a clear $25 up and down limit on the day. That used to be $10, then it was $15. So they've widened the limits again to try and control the trading environment. That has been, I think, one of the factors in sapping the appetite for the advance. But also, then we look at, for example, some of the home builders, and they were also in negative territory in here today. There's certainly been a clear correlation between lumber and the home builders over the last while. I think we are at a rather interesting juncture here because at the stock market is rather enthused at the potential that the trade war with China will ease and that we are not going to have additional interest rate hikes. But the bigger question I think a lot of people will be very interested in is the outlook for unemployment. Everyone is jumping to the conclusion that the first quarter of the year is generally the worst quarter because of weather and because this year of the government shutdown. A lot of the most bullish forecasts are very dependent on growth picking up in the second quarter. There is certainly potential for that, and the stock market is certainly pricing that potential in. But we will need to see evidence sort of coming through. And the initial jobless claims, that's also a trend, at least that's updated weekly. Well, that also makes it volatile. But if we monitor that and start to see evidence of an uptrend, then that would be a lead indicator for trouble out there on the horizon. One of the most important things that I think is worth highlighting is that when you get an inverted yield curve, the stock market generally tends to continue to rally for at least another 6 months. It takes about 6 months for the contractionary effect of an inverted yield curve to have an effect on the wider economy. It's usually in that 6 months that you get the most vociferous argument about whether the signal that has been provided is efficacious or not. And I suspect that that is what we're going to get on this occasion. Think that when we look at the stock market action, then there is certainly the potential that the market is going to do better from here, that we have to at least be open to the potential outcome that this bull market has got another leg on the upside available to it before we start to see liquidity really contracting. And that is, I think, got to be one of the base cases as long as these major indices are sustaining these moves above their respective trend means. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.